everybody, and welcome to the Aggieville Alley Cat Podcast. Where come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. I'm Ace Edwards, right alongside
Connor Balthazar.
And today, it's just going to be the Catsketball recap for the previous week. And of course, we have to start with the big bit of good news, and that is the Sunflower Showdown victory in favor of your Kansas State Wildcats up against, naturally, KU. This was an overtime victory, and honestly, probably goes down as just another classic in the Sunflower Showdown rivalry. Very similar to last year's game, where you're going to have a lot of people talking about it for a very long time, and even neutral observers talking about it, just based on the fact that it was a genuinely good game.
Yeah, it was. It's yet another overtime game. Puts Ruhmtang 11-0. In overtime, which is just an unbelievable run. He has K-State now among all teams has the, I think, tied for second longest active overtime winning streak, which I think the longest is like 14 or something like right now, but it's over a much longer period of time than Jerome Tang has had.
Yeah.
But yeah, this game was pretty phenomenal. A little surprising, very surprising result. I won't mince words, I guess, but it was shocking, given how this team had been playing recently, to see just how well things seemed to go at times. Even though there were definitely moments in this game where things did not look good, especially like right as the second half started, because that was a big concern for us at halftime, was how we'd respond to KU's adjustments. And out the gate, it looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
But then we adjusted and got right back in it, and it seemed like we were kind of going through the same issues that we had, that we've had in other games, where we'll tie it, but just can't quite take the lead.
Yeah.
But we took the lead a few times late before KU ended up tying it again, but we just were able to persevere from Tyler Perry stepping up, hitting some huge shots and some huge free throws as well. And Kim Carter had a really good day as well. But Perry, of course, is the big story.
Yeah. I also want to point out, I will cover a little bit of KU's players before you cover the starters for K-State. And, you know, KU's big names got theirs, including one name that we aren't used to scoring a whole lot in DeJuan Harris. But Hunter Dickinson still had 21. He still got a double-double. Kevin McCullough Jr. obviously ended up 15 points. KJ Adams Jr., 13 points. But what came to bite KU in this game was just the lack of depth. And, you know, two of their best players ended up fouling out. One had four. So the lack of depth that KU had is really what did them in this game.
Yeah, and that's been their biggest Achilles heel the entire season, is that they brought in a lot of guys, and outside of their starters, pretty much everyone they brought in has not lived up to expectations. Nick Timberlake has not been who they thought he would be. Parker Brown is just not very playable. Marco Jackson was a starter, but was not playing well at all and is now on the bench again. Furphy's really the only one that's kind of developed over the course of this season. Everyone else already was what they are, really. But yeah, this is probably the least deep or the most shallow KU team that we've seen in quite some time. Yeah, their four of their five starters had good games scoring-wise, but they all had errors at some point, and they all had moments where K-State got the better of them. Even Hunter Dickinson, who scored 21 and had 12 rebounds, he got rejected several times by K-State bigs, which did surprise me. I was worried about how we would fare against him in the field, but we honestly did pretty good, I felt. He did have 21, but a few of those were just some putbacks. A few were shots at the elbow, but we, for the most part, did a pretty good job, I thought, against him. And everyone else kind of was just up and down. And but I was pretty happy with our defensive effort.
Yeah. Speaking of defensive effort, I think it's also worth noting they only shot 3 of 15 from 3.
Yeah.
You don't win many games like that. And conversely, when you're on the defensive side, you do win a lot of games when you do that.
Yeah, that was... I don't expect KU to go 3 of 15 when we play them in Allen But
yeah, not looking forward to that one.
But you absolutely take that anytime you can get a KU team on a bad shooting night, because that's just one thing that where they're normally able to get us is that they hit their shots. But we generally contested well. Hunter Dickinson got a couple of wide open threes, but he didn't hit either. And I think he's not been shooting as much from three recently, which maybe helps. But yeah, offensively, things went pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, and that leads us into the starters, which...
Yeah, so Tyler Perry was the main event here. Played all 45 minutes of this game and had 26, 7 of 15 from the field, 4 of 10 from 3, and then 8 of 9 at the free throw line. And his one miss was a fairly inconsequential one very late in the game. Then he had 5 rebounds, just 1 foul, 4 assists, 3 turnovers, and 2 steals. This was his best game on the year, and especially when you weigh it in terms of how important this game was, I don't think it's close, because, there were multiple times we desperately needed offense, and Perry hit some shots that he's not even really even been attempting this year, some really acrobatic layups. He had a massive layup in overtime and was great, but... And then, of course, him getting to the line, that's a huge part of his game because he's so effective there. I mean, this was the Tyler Perry that we were promised. And he's been doing pretty well these last few games. The last three games, he's scored 19 or more in all three. Maybe he's finally hitting his stride. I imagine we're still going to see ups and downs from him. But if we can still continue to get games like this, at least occasionally from him, then that does a lot for this team. Cam Carter... He played all 45 minutes as well and had 19 points on 6 of 14 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3, including 2 very early ones, then 4 of 5 at the free throw line. He had 11 rebounds too, so he got a double-double, a very quiet 11 rebounds as well, mainly because they were all defensive. But then he had 2 fouls, which for him is fantastic, in 45 minutes, and then 2 assists, 4 turnovers, a block, and a steal. He was a little bit sloppy with the ball at times, didn't have some... In some clutch moments, his passing wasn't great.
Yeah,
but
you and I were about to have a heart attack towards, like, there was a stretch in the second half where you and I were losing our minds.
Yeah, he definitely needs to work on the passing. He can get a little bit more crisp there. But, I mean, his scoring and defense is just, those two things are just such massive contributions that even with the occasional unforced error, you can't really take him off the floor. Arthur Kaluma, he was not fantastic in this game, but he did have a few big shots. He had a really nice layup in the early second half to end KU's run out the gate. But he played 41 of the 45 available minutes, had 13 points, 4 of 11 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3, so not a great shooting day for him for his standards especially. And 4-4 at the line. He had 8 rebounds, 4 fouls, 2 assists, 3 turnovers, and a steal. So he did a lot. It wasn't the most efficient shooting day for Kaluma, but he otherwise did have a fairly decent day. And then you have Day-Day Ames. He played 22 minutes and had 6 points, 2 of 4 from the field, hit a huge 3 in the first half, went 1 of 1 there, and then went 1 of 2 at the free throw line, and then he added a rebound, a foul, 2 assists, 2 turnovers, and a steal. Did hit one of his turnovers, I remember being pretty bad. He was kind of over-aggressive on a fast break, and when he just didn't need to. But had that big 3-pointer. His layup was against Dickinson with a lot of contact as well, and that was really big. We've been starting to see recently some flashes from Day-Day to where we're really starting to see that 4-star talent. Where he's not putting it all together yet, but he's definitely a lot closer than he has been at other points this season. And then rounding out the lineup was Jarrell Colbert, who, even though he did not score in this game, he was 0-2 from the field, 0-2 at the free throw line. He played 16 minutes and was very impactful in his time. Had 3 rebounds, 2 fouls, 3 assists, 0 turnovers, 2 blocks, and a steal. He rejected Hunter Dickinson a couple of times, had some big offensive rebounds, and then had some really good passes as well.
Which you don't expect from a guy his size.
Yeah, from a guy like Jarrell Colbert, especially from what we've seen from him this year. We don't expect him to have great passing vision, nonetheless, crisp passes. But he had a few times was involved in some fantastic ball movement, and that was really surprising. But he really helped facilitate the flow of the offense and was a plus on defense. And plus minus is not a great statistic. It's just not a great statistic. But Jarrell Colbert and Will McNair, their plus minus statistics were vastly different. Will McNair's was very bad. He was in like the minus like 15-ish category, and Jarrell Colbert was the opposite. He was like in the plus 15-ish area, which plus minus, if you don't know, is just like what's the team's point margin when that player's on the floor. So K-State scored 13 more points than KU did when Jarrell Colbert was on the floor. Will McNair's was not great, even though he had some big moments, but Colbert, he was good. I liked what we saw from him.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, the only thing I wish for Jarrell Colbert in this game is that he stayed on the floor a bit more. I think that's just a conditioning thing, because he is a big dude. It's hard to get big dudes a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
But from the bench production, there's really only two names, and by really only, I mean there's literally only two names. That's Will McNair, played 29 minutes, 3 of 7 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3, which it's always great watching big men try threes. 3 rebounds, all of them defensive, 1 foul, 3 turnovers, 6 total points. And then David Gasan, who I believe is dealing with some sort of injury or isn't 100%, which is why he's not in the starting 5. Played 27 minutes, 2 of 5 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3, 1 of 4 from the free throw line, but did have 7 rebounds, including 2 offensive ones, 3 fouls, 2 assists, 1 block, so 5 total points. So this is a sort of get-right game after a game we won't spend much time on, the 75-72 loss down in Stillwater. This was the no-good, very bad doo-doo game. And there, it, which granted, this script was very, very similar to the Texas Tech game. And by that I mean you and I both started laughing at the game at the first half, because a lot of very funny things were happening. And then it quickly turned into, okay, guys, you can stop the bit now. It's not funny anymore. And then we lost to probably the worst team in the Big 12. So maybe chalk that up as a negative.
Yeah, this was a brutal game to lose. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this game because nobody cares about it anymore, because we just beat KU. But yeah, this was a pretty brutal watch. Just watching the game slip away from us like that against a team that we absolutely should have beat. Yeah, this was a pretty embarrassing loss, honestly.
What the Maple doing?
Meowing.
Yeah, goodbye, Maple. She just ran up and down the hallway, well, yelling. All right, whatever. She doesn't want us to talk about this game either. But yeah, the only thing that I really want to say after this game is it was a massive, massive letdown, a massive disappointment. And this was the game that sort of, if we didn't beat KU, it would be like a genuine struggle to like claw our way through this opening segment of the show. Then again, if we didn't beat KU, we probably wouldn't lead with the men's team.
That's true.
But yeah, that's really it. I guess because this is going to be a shorter episode, we can sort of take a look at the rest of the season and, you know, think about our tournament chances. If for every it's so over after the Oklahoma State game, there was a, okay, we might be on the bubble. I'm not going to say we're so back. We might be on the bubble after beating KU at home. And looking at the last, 8 games? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah. 8 games. Thank you. Looking at the last 8 games, there you have to win all of them at home. So you have to beat TCU, BYU, West Virginia, and Iowa State on Senior Day. And in order to feel slightly comfortable, you need to beat one of Texas, Cincinnati, or KU, or BYU the first time in order to feel even remotely comfortable. Like, and you probably still need to win a game in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I mean, holding serve at home would be massive. TCU is a good team, and that'd be big. And they're beatable as well. BYU is a tough out just because they're just so good at three-point shooting that if there's hot one night...
We're screwed.
Yeah. We'll just have to hope for the best. West Virginia, we've beaten before, but they're going to be healthy, so this is going to be a different West Virginia team. And Iowa State, we saw what happened last time, so hopefully we have a bit of a chip on our shoulder about that, and it'll be senior day. So I imagine that will be a very emotional game for K-State, but... Yeah, there's no nights off still. It's still the Big 12. The tournament's not a sure thing at this point in the game. But it's also not out of the question either. So it's just going to require us taking this KU game and building it into something more, yeah. Which that remains to be seen.
Yeah. And are you of the opinion... Obviously, this is all assuming we stay and serve at home. Which do you think we need to win one of the away games or two?
I think if we win one and hold serve at home, I think that puts us in a pretty good spot. I wouldn't say a lock, but I would feel more confident than not about making it into the tournament and probably not being in the first four. But it would depend on a few things, like margin of victory, who is it that we beat on the road. Like a win at KU is going to be a lot different than a win at Texas this year, because Texas has not been very good at home this year, although that's still going to be a good win. It just kind of depends, I guess, which isn't a satisfying answer, but I struggle to pick one option for sure, just because I know that it's pretty fluid, and you know, depends on what the other teams in the bubble do as well. I know if everybody starts losing all at once, then yeah, we may need to do less. But if everyone just finishes the year really strong, then that could be trouble for us.
Yeah, and I think the alarm bell games are probably Texas and Cincinnati, because both of those are teams that are on the bubble. So I would honestly say that if we beat Texas and Cincy, we might be able to drop a game at home. But I can't even really be confident in that. But we need to beat... I'll even specify, we need to beat one of Texas or Cincinnati on the road to feel even remotely good about our chances.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true, you know, with the exception being like an unforeseen circumstance where we beat BYU or KU or something, because I'm not counting on us beating BYU. This Saturday, I'm definitely not counting on us beating KU and Allen. But, you know, if either of those things happen, then that changes the calculus a little bit.
Yep. Any final thoughts on the men's team before we move on to the lone women's game?
I wish that we'd decide if we're good or not.
You just want to be the consistency? You just want consistency?
I'd rather know if I'm supposed to care or not.
I think that's fair. Now moving into the women's game, it's the Texas matchup, which is the one that we weren't feeling too great about. And unfortunately, Texas did end up walking away victorious 61-54, although K-State did make a very valiant comeback attempt in specifically the fourth quarter. But this was, man, this was one of those games that I don't want to say that you can't feel good about it, because at the very end, what this team showed me is fight, and I think that that's admirable, and I think that holding it to 7 after getting mollywopped for a little while, I think that that shows that the team is more than just Yoki. I think that if Yoki plays, we may honestly beat them by like a pretty comfortable margin, and that's saying a lot, given some of the performances here. But before I get into starter stats, do you have any general thoughts about the game?
Yeah, this was one I didn't expect to win going in. But yeah, I was pretty happy with how we played down the stretch, like you said. It definitely felt like this was one that we could have won, and maybe even should have, but we were just a little bit too slow with some of our adjustments.
Yeah. But going into the starters, Serena Sundell played 39 minutes, 5 of 11 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3. You'll notice that 3-point shooting was bad. 4 of 7 from the free throw line, 2 rebounds, 2 fouls, 8 assists, 4 turnovers, 3 steals, 14 total points. Jalen Glenn, 40 minutes, went the distance in the game, 3 of 12 from the field, 2 of 7 from 3. I will also say that Jalen Glenn was probably the most fouled person, that it simply was not called for. You and I watched her get not only clothesline multiple times, but there were, I think, 2 or 3 shots where her arm, like, you could hear her arm getting slapped in the middle of the shot, and there just wasn't a call. I think the Mr. Magoo referee was working this game from the BYU game as well. But she also added 5 rebounds, 3 of them offensive, 3 fouls, 1 block, 2 steals, 8 total points. Gisella Sanchez, 13 minutes, 2 of 6 from the field, 1 of 3 from 3, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 5 total points. Gabby Gregory, the last 2 starters, neither of them had good days. In fact, I don't like being mean to players, but both of them were active liabilities whenever they were on the court. Gregory played 17 minutes, 0 of 6 from the field, 0 of 3 from 3, 2 rebounds, 3 fouls, 1 assist, no points. And then Briley Glenn had probably, it was probably her toughest game, maybe of her career, but certainly this year. 13 minutes, 0 of 2 from the field, 0 of 1 from 3, 3 fouls, 1 turnover, 1 steal with 0 total points. So the back end of the starting lineup there, yeah, you'll get Serena getting 14, but we've always said that while Serena is more than capable of taking over a game, she can't do everything by herself. She scored 14. She did her part. And there was someone off the bench who did more than their part as well. But when you're getting next to nothing from your other, like, 2 players that you really need to bank on being consistent, you're not going to win games.
Yeah. Eliza Maupin, she was great in this game. Played 30 minutes, so she was getting starter minutes off the bench. And had 18 points, perfect 7-7 from the field, 4 of 6 at the free throw line, 4 rebounds, did foul 4 times. That's not to be unexpected. Then had 2 turnovers and a block. She was excellent, really, I thought. She continues to be a huge asset for K-State, and at times kept us in this game. She is just such a weapon to have offensively. There's so much to like about her as a player. She's remarkable, and I'm ecstatic that she's had yet another, like, 7-7 game, because she was perfect on the road against Baylor as well, so either 6-6 or 7-7. But I mean, she was the high scorer for K-State in this game, and multiple occasions just was fantastic. But unfortunately, just her and Serena being the main contributors just wasn't quite enough. Zionna Walker, she had finished with 23 minutes, had 8 points, 2 of 7 from the field, 0 of 2 from 3, and then 4 of 5. The free throw line, had 5 rebounds, 3 fouls, 4 turnovers, a block, and 2 steals. Monty Lester played 20 minutes, didn't have a ton of production offensively, at least in terms of scoring. 0 of 1 from the field, 1 of 2 free throws, so just 1 point for her. She had 4 rebounds, and 2 of those were on offense, and had 2 fouls, 1 assist, 1 turnover, a block, and then 3 steals as well, which is a little unexpected from her. But she was really good at getting her hand on entry passes in this game. So she did have a good defensive strategy there. And Terrence Sides played 5 minutes, 0 of 1 from the field. It was a 3-point attempt, and then had 1 rebound, which was an offensive rebound, and had 1 assist and 1 turnover. She looked a little bit less lost in this game, I thought, than she has in games previous. Still was not fantastic in this game, but it was definitely not her worst outing as of late. We've definitely seen worse from Terrence Sides. But the bench as a whole, other than Eliza Maupin, we just needed a little bit more from him. Zionna Walker, we just need 1 or 2 more buckets from Zy Walker. Monty Lester, if we can just get 1 bucket from her, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I will give Imani a little bit of credit here. She did better than I thought she would going up against Texas bigs, which Texas bigs are no joke. They never are. Like, in any sport, Texas will always at least have one consistently large individual. that's across sports. But Imani held her own. Got her cut checked a few times. I like your cut, G. And just got clotheslined on the back of the head. Wasn't called. But, you know, credit to her. I think Imani has a lot. I think in several ways, Imani is sort of like the five version of Eliza Maupin, where you can kind of see how the pieces can come together. They're just not coming together quite yet because she's young. Eliza, granted, I think Eliza showed a lot more last year than Imani has shown this year. And I think that just is a testament to how much of a ridiculous athlete Eliza Maupin is. But I don't think Imani is like a bad athlete. In fact, I think she's a weirdly good lateral mover for her size. And I think she has weirdly quick hands for her size. And, you know, she still has the opportunity to sit and learn behind Yoki if Yoki comes back next year, which I don't think there's been an announcement to either way. But I think she could come back because of the COVID year.
Yeah, I'm under that impression as well. But yeah, we've not heard anything yet.
Yeah. But the last note I really want to bring up on this game is just the three-point shooting was brutal. Only making 3 of 21 attempts, which, you know, you can take out. I always think that in most games you can take out 2 or 3, maybe 3 or 4 three-point attempts a game, just because you're throwing up a prayer at the end of a possession. But even then, you have to do better than 14.3%. That's what's killed us, like, the last 3 years with mini teams, is just not being able to make the three-point ball fall.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that we were, like, taking contested threes and missing them. We got more open threes in this game than we did the first time against Texas, I thought.
Yeah, we just weren't converting.
Yeah, which was really tough to see. Serena Sundell, who's been shooting really well from three this year, we desperately needed a big three-point shot from her at some point in this game. We just couldn't quite get it. Jalen was 2-7, but pretty like fairly inefficient. Gisella, she had her three at the very end of the game when we were trying to make a late push. So it wasn't insignificant, but it was a little. It was too little too late, really. But, I mean, Gabby going 0-3, Zai 0-2, Briley going 0-1 and not contributing much on offense. It makes it really difficult for us to win, because really this offense was carried by Serena and Eliza in this game. And Gabby, we desperately need her to find her shot. That's one of the biggest things that we're missing right now, is we need somebody other than Serena and sometimes Jalen to be a significant outside threat in our starting lineup. And Gabby just has not been it. I understand she's playing hurt, but we really need her to get more consistent down the stretch here.
Yeah. And one final note is it finally happened. Serena Sundell realized that Eliza Maupin is faster than everyone and just got her on a fast break. And I think you were getting like a drink or something at the time, because you just heard me in the living room just freaking out, saying something to the effect of, "Oh my goodness, she finally did it." And you had to ask me what. I said, she's beginning to believe. Because you just see Liza outrunning everyone. But yeah, that is the only women's game that happened. And then the next few, like we did for the men's team, we can talk about the back end of the schedule here. You have versus Oklahoma State, at Iowa State, versus UCF in West Virginia, at KU, versus Iowa State, and then at Texas Tech. So our schedule after Oklahoma and Texas got significantly easier, knock on wood. I think right now we're either tied for second or stand alone in second in the Big 12 race, because Oklahoma, I know, is number one. I can verify this information. Give me a moment, but while I am doing this, Connor, please stall.
Yeah. The Oklahoma State game coming up this Saturday, that should be a winnable game for us. It's a home game, and Oklahoma State has been dealing with a ton of injuries, and they're a little bit down right now. It won't be an absolute cakewalk. They're still a quality team, but that should be an absolutely winnable game. Iowa State on the road will be difficult, but that is supposedly our target for Yoki coming back. And if Yoki's back for that game, I feel significantly better because Iowa State does have a really good freshman in the post that I am worried about. But if we have Yoki there to be a rim protector, then I feel a bit better about our chances. UCF at home, we should be able to run away with that one because we just blew them out on the road. West Virginia, they've been pretty solid team this year.
Yeah, they've been good. They're ranked 23rd.
Yeah, so that's not going to be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination, but we get them at home, which is good. KU on the road is never going to be easy. Iowa State at home for senior night. Glad that we get a return game for them. And at Texas Tech, they've been kind of struggling at times this year. So hopefully we are able to take care of business down in Lubbock. But yeah, this is definitely an easier schedule down the stretch than the men have. But there's still going to be some tough games here. Any road game is going to be questionable. Iowa State's still a good team, but at least there's a game in there like UCF where we've already played them and we demolished them the first time.
And they're bad.
Yeah, they're just not a very good team.
Yeah, and I was right. We are tied for second in the Big 12 with West Virginia, a single game behind Oklahoma. Looking at Oklahoma's schedule, they play Iowa State, Baylor at home. West Virginia in Morgantown, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State at home, and then Texas at home, and they wrap up against KU. So OU has a significantly harder schedule than we do down the pipeline. I think it, honestly, for all we can do is win out and then hope OU falls to a team, which I think is more likely than not. Although they do get their toughest matchups at home for the rest of the year, except West Virginia. But I also think Texas will be looking for revenge in Norman. But right now, all that is focused on is, I believe there was a report in the Mercury today saying that Yoki's day-to-day with her ankle injury, which I don't want to discount any team because the last time we did that specifically to an Oklahoma State, actually every time we discount an Oklahoma State school or squad in every sport, we immediately regret it. So I'm going to say this carefully. I think it is more important that we know Yoki is healthy for the rest of the year than it is to rush her back.
Yeah, I have no doubt that that's what's going on, especially now that we're through the Oklahoma and Texas games. There's no incentive, really, I think, to rush her back for the game this weekend. I imagine that we're handling it carefully because I think we know the risk of playing her against like Oklahoma State does not outweigh the reward. That much is obvious. Iowa State, I would not be shocked to see her in a limited capacity and then start easing her back into it to where she's probably close to full go for the West Virginia game and then get those last three games kind of at normal pace. But that's not something I'm super worried about. I trust the staff to not unnecessarily push her back out too early, because it'd be one thing if this game Saturday was the Texas game, then it may be worth the risk in some ways, but we've already played those two tough games and we put up a good fight but weren't able to come away with either of them, so like that's in the past now. We should be able to be competitive with Oklahoma State with the roster as it stands without Ayoka Lee.
Yeah. Get her back. Get her hopefully back to 100% by the West Virginia game. And then just sort of ease her in. Maybe even ease her into the Big 12 tournament as well. But hopefully we end up at the top of the Big 12. Hopefully Oklahoma drops a game and maybe we split a regular season title. For some reason, I just have a sneaking suspicion Oklahoma's not going to drop two. I have no backing for that. I have no good reason to believe that. But I just have a feeling that they're getting hot now, and I don't see them dropping two towards the end of the year. So I think the hope is for a split regular season title, which is nothing to sneeze at, because a split regular season title still probably means we're top five.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer, of course, to win it outright, but, I mean, splitting it, I mean, that they still give you the full trophy, so I'm not too worried about it. Even though I still would, of course, prefer to have the outright. As long as we get a share of it, that's good, even though I do think we have the talent in a perfect world to have won outright. We just, sometimes you just get bad luck with injuries, and there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on the women's team before we wrap up?
It's been kind of sad this week to not have a women's game. I really got used to having a game in the middle of the week to like kind of lift me through that middle portion of the week.
Appointment television.
Yeah. So kind of a lonely middle portion of the week, especially given the men played on Monday. But luckily it's going to be back to regular scheduled programming for the women for the rest of the season. Although the men, I think after this Saturday, they get a week off. So
we take those.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. If you want to follow or contact the show, you can follow us just about anywhere at Aggieville ACats. And if you want to email us, we're AggievilleAlleyCats@gmail.com. If you want to follow us more personally, I am at ACEdward00.
I am at Connor Baltazor, capital C, capital B.
And if you want to support the show financially, please be sure to check out the official supporters link or the official Aggieville Alley Cat merch store. Both are in our Twitter and podcast bios, but most importantly, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast, where come rain, shine, or anything between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.